It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
All right, welcome to the second episode of today, except the first episode no longer exists. None of you will see it. It was really good. But we are doing with new technology. You know, you see how William's in a detention center over there. That's a whole new deal.
It's too bad I don't have like a orange. that's too bad. I should have thought of that. I don't have anything, but maybe I could have gotten something.
The correct bit is I only had the orange pants. So from the waist down, I look like it. But unfortunately, you can't see that. I got the little footy shoes on.
That's right. I've got orange pants.
Yeah, but right. The shirt is at the cleaners.
Yeah, it's in the laundry.
So you'll notice we're not in the same room and that William's situation looks different. William got his new computer, which we should be noticing even right now. We're not having lag. He's not blah, blah, blah. It's great.
That's true. It's good.
But there's the trial and error phase when we're setting all this up and we ran into some hiccups and that's gone. So, and unfortunately, it's now late enough when we're recording this that this is going to be a short episode, people. But it's still going to be great. It's still going to be that incredible, just distilled quality that you're used to from us.
Yeah.
quick thing. There's a hat. It's magic. Has its own email address. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. You write in. We talk about it, but usually not. You know the drill. Also, though, we are getting down there in terms of transmogrified questions. Y'all need to be sending in some emails because when we switch to that, I have it on good authority from the hat. There's only one in there right now. We need more. So do that. Come up with bigger things. You still got stuff you want to plug, bigger things. You want to tell us a story, like a whole story, and then like ask us a thing about it, or just tell us a story and be like, cool, put it on the air. Whatever. But like, this is your chance. Or if you want to ask the little shit that you've been asking before, you can still do that in an email. It's fine.
But yeah.
Put some stuff in there. Anyway, how was your week?
Busy. School. How was your week?
Yeah, you're back in school. Ooh. When you said that thing and you're like, classes are back. I'm like, seriously, every time you talk about being in school, I get like PTSD flashback. I'm like, I never want to be in school again. Not that school was necessarily bad. It's just so a thing. I never want to be in. My week was good. As you know, I finished a new short story that I've sent for you.
Yeah, it's really good, by the way.
Is it? Because this was my concern. I obviously I want it to be written or whatever. Something about it, because it's very short. It's on the low end of what you'd call a short story as opposed to like flash fiction. But I was just worried it wasn't a good story, like a good thing about which to write a story.
I mean that, no.
Okay, good.
When I was reading it and I haven't had time to, you know, like.
Which fine, there's no schedule on this. I'm working
so
on
can
stuff.
I, let me ask you a question real quick about it. Did you have, it feels like you had a harder time starting it than finishing it.
It's hard to say because I started it in February. It was a piece of free writing that I started way back in February.
Okay. Because it starts, it's so much more confident and strong, like from about 2/3 down all the way down, like I wouldn't change anything. I mean, it's like, this is like Neil Gaiman's type stuff. It's good. But something about the first few paragraphs or the start of it is not up to snuff for the rest of it. I don't know what that is.
I don't know how to talk about this. It's going to be everybody else, but you can't have failed to notice. I worked really hard to keep time and place out of it. I very much did not set it in a specific, I avoided as much as I could to place it in a specific time or a specific place.
Right.
And that was very much on purpose. And I think I did that less as I went on, cause I was just tired and wanted to write more. And I think that might not be a good device. I think
Another thing I thought was it sort of starts in the middle of the story, then goes to the beginning of the story, or like it starts in the middle of her life somewhere. Then it goes to the beginning, and at some point it catches up to where the start was, but I don't know where that is. You know what I mean? It's like if you ignore the beginning and just start at her beginning and then go clear to the end, it's just one smooth thing and it's great.
Yeah. And that's, the story came about because I thought of the first line.
Oh, okay.
And a lot of my stories come out that way. Hell, my novel came out that way. And as often as not, I end up having to scrap the original first line.
That happens to me too.
Yeah. Kill your darlings. Like, it's a real thing.
It's like the whole mood changes, and then it's like, but I like the mood down here better than what I thought I liked up here. So now I have to retroactively change the whole tenor of it to the top. Yeah. And that happens to me too.
The current first line is she realized she had become a wicked witch. And the point at which you're supposed to catch up is when she again realizes she'd become a wicked witch, which is a specific spot they said. But I can absolutely also see why, other than that phrase, there's no acknowledgement that like now we're caught up.
Yeah, well,
and then go from there.
Or maybe it's just me, I don't know. But
no, I can absolutely see that.
My gosh, there was a point past which, I mean, it was when I first started reading it, it was fine, but then there was a point past which it was better than fine. It was like, this is good. This is really, really good. And it was like that clear to the end. I'm like, wow, that's just fantastic.
The point at which I picked it up, I mean, I've edited it a couple times now, but the point at which I picked it up from it having sat for months is the point at which she got her boyfriend. So
it's really good.
That may be about, if that's the point at which you notice, that may be what it is. Those two distinct sections were written months apart from each other, but this is all good to know. And I look forward to getting more detail from you as when you have time to edit it. But like I said, there's no rush. There's no schedule. I'm already working on other things and working on publishing the novel, which it's so much simpler when you do it yourself.
There's a lot of challenges there for sure.
Quick Loki watch. You caught up on Loki? Yeah. All right. How'd you feel?
You know, there are some things that were, you know, I don't know.
Trish came out of it hot. Trish came out of it legit mad.
Okay. Yeah.
About it. And I wasn't like, but I think some, because she was trying to explain to me why she was mad. And she's like, they did this wrong and this is all fucked up. And everything was true. I'm like, yeah. I think I maybe had already lowered my opinions because I mean, she said all this stuff and I'm like, yes, Disney/Marvel is doing a shitty job at time travel. We knew that from episode one. And I'm like, and you are correct. Everything you described is shitty. It's totally shitty in line with the other shitty stuff they've been doing.
But as I watch, it's just so often Hiddleston will do something and I'll think to myself, what an amazing choice that was there. Even made more amazing by the fact that he's doing it in a general context that's not that great, but he's making these fantastic, really effective choices. It's like, wow, this guy's a genius.
Hiddleston and the actress who plays Sylvie.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Are both incredible and do some incredible things. I don't know if they have the best chemistry necessarily, but they're both really good actors. The woman who plays Ravonna, I have difficulty with because I have feelings about the character that are coloring my opinion of the performance. And I do have to say, late series, Owen Wilson did pretty good. I still wouldn't have picked him, but like the second half of the season, he did pretty good with it. I was into that part, but yeah, I'm not happy. Fun fact though, there is a very specific character who is introduced in the last episode. I won't spoil anything, but there is one in particular character, I think you know, who was introduced in that episode, played by the dude who played the lead in Lovecraft Country. I recognized him, and I looked him up, and his Atticus Finch from Lovecraft Country.
Yeah, but like Ruby from Lovecraft Country's in it too, right?
Is that her? Oh, that's why she also seemed familiar. That would make sense. She was the female lead in His House, which I talked about a little while back. That is okay. That explains that. I really need to learn these people's names.
I know, me too.
I have this problem with so much of it.
She's amazing. I've seen her in lots of things, and she's great.
No, she is absolutely phenomenal. And she sort of snuck in Lovecraft Country and started stealing scenes left and right there too. Yeah, she's phenomenal. I have a hard time with, I don't know if this is racist to say, but I feel like this is factually accurate. African names of actors I have difficulty with, as I think a lot of white folks do. Like 6 months ago, or maybe longer, I got Mahershala Ali down. And I had been spending years not knowing how to pronounce that name, but being a very big fan of that actor. And if I'm honest with myself, I have been coasting on getting that right for far too long. I need to pick another name to get good at again.
I was
working for a little while on, I think I might have it, Daniel Kaluuya from Get Out. I might be saying that one right.
Yeah, I've heard his name pronounced so many ways, I don't know which one's right, and I've never heard him say it.
There is an incredibly phenomenal actor whose first name starts with CH and whose last name starts with E, who is in everything. Some of you may know him best as the operative from the Serenity Firefly movie. He's incredible. I can't even start to, I should work on his name. But it is absolutely unfair and disrespectful these people to not be getting these names right. I have difficulty with it, is my problem. I don't have emotional, I am too stupid. And I have to make a very conscious effort and like look them up and look videos and practice and sit like that. And I just need to be doing that more. Hats off to Jonathan Majors. I already have that name on lock. I didn't remember it from Lovecraft Country, but last night when I looked it up, I can say that one because that one's fine. I have no problem with that. So not that you needed to, Mr. Majors, but I appreciate that. John Boyega, same kind of thing. I appreciate that effort. It's my fault. I'm working on it. But anyway, gotta be faster about this. We don't have a lot of time. Saw a movie last night. It was not Gunpowder Milkshake, which a lot of people saw because it came out yesterday. We will see that. I have it on good authority. The movie is, quote, very silly. I don't have any information as to whether that's a good or a bad thing, but that's a note that I have. I'm sure we will watch that. But no, what we watched instead on Amazon, we had to pay $7 for it because it's early access. But we watched Werewolves Within, which I have been very excited about. It is a horror comedy. I'm going to say it's mostly a comedy. It deals with, well, werewolves. And there are a couple of instances of blood and gore, but it's not a scary movie at all. It's a comedy. I saw the trailer a long time ago and was very excited. I got even more excited when I found out it is the second film that the video game company Ubisoft has made. The first being the very poorly received Assassin's Creed game. And it is technically based on a video game they released that was not very good and almost nobody played it, and actually has very little to do with this movie. But the video game is based on Werewolf, the game. You know, the variant of Mafia, like that we played at Applied Systems, because I led it as a team building exercise.
Oh, yeah.
And you were a werewolf and no one ever trusted you again after that.
I was a werewolf.
Do you not remember this? So no. As a team. Okay. For those of you back, you have to look it up. If you look, there's a game called Mafia, that there's a version of it called Werewolf. And it basically involves a group of people and everybody has an identity. And most of them are just normal, but some people are like bad guys. And you have to figure out who the bad guys are and get rid of them without, but nobody shows you anything. So it's just a matter of bluffing and like, how much do you trust people and things like that. And the version we have is Werewolf, and you're in a village and somebody's a werewolf and they're killing people every night. And so in between, you're like, who's the werewolf? And people will lie and stuff. And I ran everybody through that game as a team building exercise when William was my boss, because I'm an asshole. Because, and I'm proud of this to this day, that is the worst team building exercise. That is a team dividing exercise. That's literally a game which teaches you to distrust people. I found the irony undeniable and still make myself feel warm and fuzzy inside to this day, the fact that I did that. We played like three rounds of it in the time we had, and in maybe more. In the very first one, you were a werewolf. And even though it's based entirely on drawing random cards, because you are you, nobody even entertained the idea that you were a werewolf. And you were. And after that came out, the entire team was, I'm going to say, feeling betrayed that you were. And they went after you every fucking time after that. Every other game, they're immediately like, what's up with William? I don't trust him. Because it was just such, oh God, I can't believe you don't remember that. Because that's the thing I took away the most from that, is I'm like, people's inability, because that's the thing, it's a random card thing. It has nothing to do with the actual character of the individuals involved. Okay. But people had such a clear image of you that not only did they deny the possibility that you could be the bad guy, once you were the bad guy, it was like, William's a fucking liar. He sucked. Like, immediately, like, they couldn't reconcile that you had just drawn that card. And after then, you were one not to be trusted. And I don't think you were ever a werewolf again either. But I think
I don't remember it at all.
I think they hanged you most of the time.
After that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got away with it the first time. Yeah. So this movie is based on that game. Which I love that game. And so I thought it was hilarious. And it's an absolutely killer cast. You would know a lot of them by name, a lot of them by face. And it's funny. It's a real goofy movie. Like, it's a very... People, it's surreal. It's not realistic in that people are kind of silly and stuff. But it's... I thought it was very funny and very clever. I liked it. I liked it quite a bit. So I would recommend that to people. Werewolves Within. All right. Question time. What's your Pepsi? Wow. This is from Azure Talon. Sorry.
Sound effects. Wow.
Beings. Are we... the weird thing is I have always done that, but it never came through as sound effect. I think it's something about your new computer. That now it's coming out of sound effects. Good. That's fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
Beings is how he starts this one.
Yes.
Are we as a people so traumatized by 2020 that no one really cares about the Pentagon admitting to UFO/UAPs? Signed, Azure Talon.
Sure. Well, I don't know if, I mean, what would it look like if people cared about it? I mean, I don't, maybe people do care about it, but they just don't care that much about it, or they don't care that way about it.
I hate to try and fathom what's in Azure Talon's mind, just on so many levels.
Yeah.
But I'm going to guess what he is saying is, because this did happen.
Yeah.
They did release the UFOs and stuff like that. And it did not create much of a stir in the general mainstream internet and news cycle. People didn't spend a lot of time talking about it on social media. It wasn't on a lot of news stories or talk shows or anything, to the degree that when I saw this just now, because of course I've never seen it before, I was like, oh yeah, they did do that. I forgot about that.
It's like
I'm sorry.
It was like 5 pages. I mean, it wasn't, they didn't really give a lot of details or speculations.
And that's what my response to it is it was not particularly interesting to me that the U.S. military admitted sometimes they see things and they don't know what they are.
Yeah, that's all they said, which they've said in the past. They've said that.
If they had said, no, we have never seen anything that we couldn't definitely identify, I would have known they were lying. And if somehow they had proved to me that that was true, I would have been like, holy shit, that's news to me, that the military is that on the ball that they've been able to ID. I really thought our military industrial complex was a lot stupider than that. That would have been news to me. The fact that that's the thing. It's one of these. We didn't react. And it's not because we're traumatized by 2020. Although had it been a slower news time, it might have come up more. No, the real thing is the government fucking clickbaited us. It's not a real thing. They didn't say, yeah, we found aliens. They were like, you know what? Sometimes there's shit up there. You see it far away or whatever. We don't know what's going on. Sometimes it does shit that we're like, oh, how did it do that? That's not news.
Yeah, it didn't seem like news. Sure. I mean, it seemed like they were just telling us stuff we already knew, so.
Yeah, I mean, or could have surmised based on the way things work.
Right, and I mean, you know, you can see a video that, you know, the Pentagon has said, yeah, this is real video from a real fighter jet, and it really captured this thing that you're seeing, and it's cycling through the scans. So if there was any exhaust, you'd be able to see it in this scan. If it was, you know, a lot of the obvious modes of propulsion, we would be able to notice in this and that, the other scan. So they're explaining, you know, what the scans mean and what kind of behaviors this thing is exhibiting and how far, you know, it's not so much that someone's visually looked at it and guessed how far it is. I always love it when some aviator says, well, I've been an aviator for 20 years and I could tell how far away this was. Well, if you've been an aviator for 20 years, you know that you can't tell how far away something is.
Don't know what it is.
Yeah. And it's,
because
it's,
you have no sense of dimension and shit.
Yeah. There's no frame of reference or whatever. Now,
but it's actually just outside the cockpit, but it's only this big.
No, but they have, you know, actual computer equipment that's figuring out some of this stuff, you know, velocity and stuff. So it does raise a lot of questions. And you're like, well, I mean, that's just, you know, that is crazy what that thing is doing and what it looks like and all this other stuff. But maybe other people feel differently. There's nothing about, even though it's doing crazy things, and I'll admit that, I just don't jump to the conclusion that, well, it's beyond our ability to possibly understand. It's got to be extraterrestrial. It just doesn't.
And that is the thing I should, because, you know, whole life I have been subjected to seeing a lot of sightings of UFOs, cryptids, ghosts.
Yep, yep.
DB Cooper, whatever.
DB Cooper.
Jimmy Hoffa, Elvis. I still don't believe Elvis is real. And I want to say very categorically, specifically here, I have not believed those are all hoaxes. Some of them probably are. Some of them I looked at and definitely thought they were. But some of them I'm like, no, that's some shit that somebody filmed that we don't know what that is.
No.
I have never felt that it's all explainable by me or that people are lying. I have totally found it plausible, not definite, but plausible that some of these things could be experimental designs that the government is doing or whatever. I mean, sure. Yeah.
What do we know?
I am pretty confident the government is doing shit they're not telling us about. Yeah, and so this right. could be one of them. But right. I have never thought that that is the explanation or that there aren't others. All of that continues to be true. And that to me covers what they said. And on top of all of that, I still, and I can't prove it, I could definitely be proven wrong, but I still fairly strongly believe that no extraterrestrial spacecraft has visited our planet, and even more strongly feel that none of the things we've cited are that. I don't believe it.
That's my impression.
I don't believe in ghosts, and I don't, by and large, believe in cryptids. I believe that there are animals out there that we have yet to discover, but I don't believe Bigfoot or Nessie or any of those are things. I can't prove it. Neither can you. But acknowledging that there's shit I can't explain, and even acknowledging there's shit the government can't explain, is not the same thing to me. Not even close to being like, that means is aliens or is Bigfoot or is Elvis.
Agreed. I completely agree with that.
I have never seen conclusive proof of Elvis. I haven't. I've seen a lot of recordings. Some of them are very lifelike. I've heard a lot of firsthand accounts, but nothing that has convinced me that Elvis Presley ever existed. Sorry. All right. You think we got time for another one?
I think so.
All right. This one's from Jazz.
Good.
How do you think technology will change people's relationships in the future? She's clearly talking about teledildonics, which is the real name of a real field of consumer products. Having sex over the net.
Yeah. No,
what she's talking about, I don't think.
But that's an interesting phenomenon, though, that, among other things.
Yeah, I always file that under the broad umbrella category of we all wish we had a holodeck. Like, there's just a huge category of, like, we want VR that is completely immersive. And I'm like, yeah, that'd be cool. Whatever.
When I wrote back in the 90s about what I called computer-mediated interaction, I intended for the stuff I was writing to cover not just the technology we had at the time, but, you know, if we had completely immersive virtual reality or what have you.
I'm a god when I'm in my pod.
So when I, when I wrote, I mean, these were papers I delivered at, like, the, you know, conferences and stuff. They didn't seem to impress anybody, but my mentor thought they were pretty good. So, you know, but anyhow, I remember at the time asserting that, I was pretty sure that no matter how good the technology got, VR, AR, whatever it was going to be, there was always going to be something, even completely immersive, very realistic holodeck style VR was going to have a little bit of a text and email quality to it. What? Are you scared of the cat?
No, go ahead talking. I'm fine.
What do you do?
I'm just fucking around. Keep going.
By that, I mean, everybody I knew who met each other online and formed relationships online, there were two things that were true about just about every single one of these people. One,
they were nerds.
They did not at all act online the way they usually acted in real life. Not even close. But that's point number one. Point number two, they nevertheless wanted to meet in person. They nevertheless were not satisfied with this interaction. However fun it was, they could be funnier than they were in real life. They could be in so many ways more attractive than they were in real life, but it did not satisfy them. They had to meet these people in real life and risk in real life not being as charming and funny and witty and all those things. And so to me, that suggested that it wouldn't matter how good the technology gets. A person would always be aware of the unreality of it. And so it would only be so satisfying. Some people would be okay with it because they're introverts or what have you. But as the aggregate, I surmised, would always crave to be able to meet whoever it was they were interacting with in person. And it was technology was never going to replace that. That was my opinion then, and that's still my opinion now.
As someone who has lived a lot of this firsthand, I've done a great deal of this. Starting as young as 12 or 13, I was making friends online and meeting them in person and frequently having to be vetted. My parents were on the cutting edge frontier of your kid wants to meet someone they met on the internet. Because at age 13, I developed a very close friendship with a 30-year-old woman who I was helping cope emotionally through her divorce she was going through. And we wanted to meet in person. And my parents were like, the fuck? So what ended up happening was I was in a high school play and she and some other friends online came to the play and saw it and met my parents. And then we went and hung out at their house for a few hours. And then they took me home later that night. So that was how we negotiated that whole process. But I had a lot of friendships online, many of which I met in person. I had a lot of romantic relationships online, some of which became romantic in person, some of which I sort of dated and we would meet and then we would most of the time be apart. But I also had a lot of ones that I was presenting as female, and I would be honest about that. But a lot of people, that was the relationship they wanted, was with the female individual. And so we both kept it online exclusively for that. On the other hand, some of those exact relationships, I did meet the person in person and it went horribly bad. And I will say in general, there was often that urge because it didn't seem like it was part of my brain was like, it's not real if it's not that. And they were almost always very disappointing. Because it's all in your head, sort of hypothetical how it would be, and you can make it however you want online. And in person, it's the reality, and the reality can never reach your hopes. But I think there's another interesting snag to this. Because the idea online is that I have a lot more control over what, like conscious control over what I'm presenting. Like I can pause before I choose my words, or I can start typing something, back it up and do it again, or to turn it into advanced sci-fi things, I'm stuttering because I'm nervous, but I make sure my avatar doesn't stutter.
Right. This was something that I would talk to people about, like, you know, when they would talk about VR, they would talk about the technology as something like, you know, people would see you as you really are. And I said, no, that's not going to happen.
I mean and yeah, that's there's the going to be all telecommunications kinds of ways to is yeah. that. And we have that. This thing we're doing right here is about that. I want it to be as real as possible for us sitting face to face at a table. I don't need a VR situation for that. It's not me trying to get the experience. It's me trying to get the information and I can do that just fine.
And, but the point I made to the people I talked to back then about this kind of thing was say, because they would talk about, what about video? Because, you know, video phones has been a thing forever. So we were talking about this type of thing back then. And what I explained to them was, in, because we talked about this very kind of situation that we have right here. What I explained to them was, yes, you know, that person can have a camera and I can have a camera and we can have the cameras show as high fidelity a thing as we want. But the point is always that it's digital, which means I could tell you that you're seeing me exactly as I am. But if the technology was sophisticated enough, you wouldn't really know if that's true. And so it's the digital nature of the thing, because in analog, there's no place to interrupt and put something in. In the digital world, you can interrupt the stream and you can put something in there and it can be completely fake, which means, and when people realize that, they naturally don't trust it. Now, maybe their lack of trust is superficial and not very, like right now, we're not really thinking about whether or not one of the other person is faking what's going on here. But the fact of the matter is, it just gets to be your mindset that digital media is not entirely trustworthy. And sometimes you really don't trust it. Sometimes you only sort of trust it, but the context is untrustworthy.
Yes.
And you, anyone who's used digital media gets that almost right away. So I have, you know, that I have has to be taken so into much, account.
I have so much to say that's relevant to this, and it all involves porn and I think would freak you out. So I can't do it, but it really is relevant and interesting, but too bad. But no, there is a different thing I want to get to that I think is a weird perspective of it. And it's from this series. I read a trilogy of books. I cannot remember the author or the titles of the books, which is very unfortunate. It's a transhuman series, sort of cyberpunky in its way and very trippy and weird. But the very first of the three takes place on a particular planet, and I think we're trying to solve a murder mystery or whatever, but it's a very cyberpunky future. And as those things are, people have a lot of augmented and virtual reality. So even out in the world, like I come and see you and my little, you know, my Google glasses are like, that's William. And I can look up the shit I could see on like Facebook or whatever, or hey, you're going to have lunch with him or whatever, and he'll tell me and all that. And that, so that's a baseline we're all familiar with. A lot of cyberpunk and sci-fi does that. This introduced, and it was very specific to this planet society, because we later went to other planets, so it wasn't a concept that I believe the term they used was Gevalot. And it was a ubiquitous form of personal social security, which means I set things so that at its biggest extreme, you, because I have settings for like everybody or for friends or whatever. And at the furthest out extreme, if you and I are walking by each other on the street, all you see is there is another person there.
Yeah.
And then at a different level, you might see sort of what I look like, or like, you know, that's a man, or that's, you know, or you might even get like, that's so and so, but you wouldn't get, and everybody, and it's a very much a social comfort thing that's in their day-to-day lives, but it's based entirely on security protocols and how much you want people to know about you in a very face-to-face way. And I found that fascinating. And that's one of those things that I'm like, that's gonna happen, because we're already, I mean, you know, privacy settings on social media are already a thing. And so if augmented reality, like VR may always be an entertainment thing, I don't know, but if augmented reality really kind of ends up taking off and things, that's totally a thing you can do. And it's really fascinating. So like it parts in the series that they're like, they saw somebody there, but they don't know who it was, or they saw somebody and they could describe them, but they don't know anything about it. Or they saw somebody and the computer immediately told them who that was and what that meant. depending on the settings. And in fact, there were social situations where a conversation would end with someone adjusting their settings, and it was viewed as a thing like this is me displaying trust, or this is me telling you, you pissed me off in that conversation because I'm now pushing you further out on my Gevalot settings.
Sure. Well, and that's another part of it, is the digital medium is not, this is hard to get people to understand, because a lot of the people I talk to, they're using systems that already have certain methods of control, like you're talking about, in them. But the thing is, for my computer to talk to your computer, and for us to engage in any kind of computer mediated interaction, there's no reason for me to know where you are. There's no reason for my machine to have any identifying mark about it has to identify your machine, but it doesn't have to know where the machine is. It doesn't have to know who you are. We have IP addresses that do all that stuff, but we have those because the machines don't naturally do that. It's kind of like how we have caller ID, because telephones don't naturally say, hey, this is the person calling.
Yeah.
When you reduce computer mediated interaction to its original and sort of natural state, the anonymity is, and the control over categorical identities is absolute. So we have to look at all the other things that people put into a system as a response to the system, not as a part of the system.
Yes.
And
there's no incentive to change that. There is nothing on, however close I want to get to you, however much I want you to be able to see what's happening here and get information about me because you are my friend or whatever, I have absolutely no incentive to be like, there's a baseline of vulnerability that everybody's going to get. No, I'm incentivized to be able to control that shit as granularly as possible.
Yep, exactly.
Now,
right.
There is incentive out there for me to want to be able to know as much as I can about others.
Sure, sure.
But I'm not going to do that at the expense of myself.
Correct.
So the incentive in the technology is always going to be for more and more control over what I am letting you see and know.
Right. And when people, what was happening in the early days, and what I suggested would continue to happen, at least for some people, was that the tension that you feel when you realize you have all that control, but you also realize the other person does too, then you have a choice. It's like, well, I want all that control, but I don't want them to have it. I'll give some up so that they'll have to give some up. But what that never happened. Everyone thought, oh, I have control and they have control. I can deal with that. That's a bargain I can deal with, because that seems fair. And then they would just go with it.
But it goes in chunks. As that when that control makes leaps, there is a period of concern. And again, firsthand experience, because I have only ever been in any sort of virtual component presenting as female online. And I can tell you, having done it for decades, the progress of people's concern over whether or not I was female has definitely had an evolution. Because back in the day, on the little mushes and muds and mucks and stuff, it was people were inclined to believe people most of the time. And it was like a big thing, like, oh, there are people out there pretending. And like, I had times where I decided I wasn't comfortable hiding anymore, and I had to tell people. And I've had people who literally were like, I can't associate with you anymore now that I know this. And nowadays, there are still dumb people like that. But so many people online are like, if I'm not going to meet you and I'm not even looking at you or whatever, it doesn't care. And as I would explain to people, because I would meet people who, because the other thing is, some people are really bad at presenting a gender other than theirs because they're just not good at the social conventions and things like that. And so there's a lot of people that I'm like, yeah, this is a dude. But I would tell people the classic line, because somebody said it to me once, when it is, I don't care if you're a hamster at the keyboard. I'm dealing with the person who is here, and the person who is here is a man or a woman or a dragon or whatever.
Right.
And that's where our interaction level is, but it's evolved. And I think this is a similar thing. Deep fakes are a latest one, and people are freaking out, understandably, about deep fakes, that people can really give you video evidence that is very difficult to determine of somebody doing something. Nick Offerman literally was every cast member of Full House, and you can't prove otherwise right now. I haven't watched that in a while. I should really watch that again. That was amazing. But as it gets more common and more used and more abused and things, we will probably hit a point where everybody will be like, yeah, video of it doesn't prove shit.
Right.
And that's how things are. And so I'm not worried about it, because I'm not investing any energy in believing it's real.
Right.
It might be real. It might not. It's clearly what the person wants to present. So when it's me presenting myself, go with that.
Yeah. Yeah. If it's
me proving to you that Elvis stole my shoes, I don't know why that's what I went. I mean, I get the Elvis. I don't know why it was about shoes. I got new shoes recently. Maybe that was it.
Are they blue suede ones?
They are not. They are not. They are none of those things. They're barely shoes. But when it comes to me proving fake dude did a crime, then you're going to be like, yeah, but anybody could do that. That doesn't tell me shit, which is fine. So I think there's evolutionary steps in the process.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's probably true. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you can see anytime people present differently. I mean, honestly, we could drive down real quickly here into the whole transgender thing to a degree, because there's now that transgenderism is getting more of a spotlight, and there are more transgender people, and there are more people who transitioned pre-puberty, and now, like, you wouldn't be able, like, a bunch of people who are like, no, that just looks like a woman or a man, and I would have no idea or whatever. Now people are inventing this whole idea of super straight, and I'm only sexually attracted to people who are cisgendered, which is bullshit on so many levels. But also, that'll eventually go away, because we'll eventually hit a point where everybody will be like, yeah, they might have been something else before, because that's really easy to do. So
yeah.
I can't worry about that anymore, because literally anybody could have been anything.
Yeah. And I mean,
I look forward to that day.
Yeah. The transhumanist, speculations about all that kind of stuff can be extremely interesting and, you know, really thought provoking for sure.
Yeah. What would be awesome is if we could pull that off with AI. I mean, without being destroyed by Terminators. But if you reached a point where, like, I'm interacting with people and I genuinely have no way to know if it's an AI or a person, and you hit a point where it's like, it doesn't, like, I'm only suspicious of it if it matters. Because that's the thing. I've said this for years. Believe everything everyone says as long as it doesn't matter. Because why not?
Mm-hmm.
And you can't always choose. It's probably not good to say believe, because you can't always choose what you believe. But trust people. If people tell you, I was in the Green Berets and I saved a lot of lives, trust them in that until such time as they're protecting you from terrorists. Like, if they're not...
Are you sure?
But like, if it's just somebody I'm drinking at the bar with, and I'm not going into a street fight with them, I'm not asking them advice as a military person, any of that. Sure. I mean, why not?
Yeah, why not?
And I think this technology becomes the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
As long as you're not trying to put the callous theft of my shoes on to someone who may or may not be the actual culprit. Where are you again? That's probably all our time.
Oh, yeah, probably.
You think? All right.
Yeah, probably.
All right. Well, we got two in. Isn't that bad?
That's good. That's good for us.
Yeah.
These days.
I really want to get through these because I am sick and tired of how sick and tired the hat is of writing these down on little note cards. Like, it's empathy. I don't do it, obviously. I don't take time to write on little teeny half note cards the weird crap you people are writing. Try and make it legible so it can be talked about on here. The hat does that. It's magic. Shut up. It's magic. But I feel like it's very tedious and stressful on the hat. And I'm just so raring for the hat not to do that anymore.
Yeah. It'll be good for the hat to not have to do that.
Exactly. So I'm really eager to just get through that. And also clearly the response has been deafening in that I feel like I'm gone deaf because I hear nothing. But I'm just really, I really want our listeners to send us broader. Like, I really want to hear, because the thing is, I have it on good authority from the hat. Again, I would never have seen that back in the day, especially they did send emails like that, but the hat, cruelly, because of the rules it had arbitrarily established, crunched those down into smaller things. But again, according to the hat, some of those larger things were very interesting and had a lot of elements to it that could not properly be expressed in a small note card, the hat claimed. And so I'm very excited to sort of get that back. And the hat is aware of the irony that the hat established these arbitrary limitations, and in fact would occasionally instruct me to chide others about their difficulties in maintaining those. And now the hat is instructing me to encourage people to do the very thing that it before had me chastised. The hat is aware of the irony.
Yeah, sure.
The hat admits that, you know, things change and relationships with listeners change, and maybe what the hat wants out of listeners, or what the hat thinks the listeners are capable of, or even what the hat thinks we as hosts are capable of dealing with and appropriately playing with, has changed over time. And maybe the hat made a mistake originally. Maybe the entire podcast is based on an incredibly ridiculous premise that serves no one at all. So the hat is willing to make changes. The hat is not willing to throw out the entire idea, if for no other reason than because of all the branded merch. But the hat grows like the rest of us, I have been told.
Wow, you have had some kind of heart-to-heart with the hat.
It's all psychic images. It's like, it's a little bit, you remember that part at the end of Event Horizon?
Okay.
Where they're looking at the logs and it's just a mishmash of scary demon orgies. Like, that happens a lot in there. Or like the visions that Shepard had in the first Mass Effect, same kind of thing. A lot of that. Mostly that. In between these little nuggets of information. All right. That's all for us this week, folks. Next week we're hopefully gonna be in person, and then we're gonna do two back to back, which we haven't done in a while, because after that I will be on a vacation that will preclude making this work. So that'll be fun. But in the meantime, Elvis never existed. Prove me wrong.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.